Breaking news today on Jay Sekulow Live. President Trump set to unveil a new executive order on police reform. We'll talk about it today.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Today in the Rose Garden, the president will take decisive action. He will sign an executive order that will set into motion new resources, new standards on the use of force.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
The president's going to take this action to assure the American people that we're listening, we're supporting law enforcement. We're not going to defund the police. Quite the contrary, we're going to find new resources to help departments obtain certifications, to improve standards for the use of force, improve training on de-escalation, and that's exactly what the American people want us to do.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So the president is preparing, as we're live on the broadcast, to sign this executive order. The executive order today will seek to improve how police officers treat African Americans and others by improving credentialing, training, and mental health resources. There's a few bullet points the White House has put out before the president speaks to the nation on this executive order. First, it will encourage police departments to employ the latest standards for use of force. It will improve information sharing. I think this is important, so that officers with shoddy records, records of excessive use of force complaints, are not hired without their backgrounds being known, so that they don't slip through the system without being known that they have, 25 complaints about excessive use of force. It's also expected to address mental health, so it will direct the Secretary of Health and Human Services to encourage police departments to embed mental health professionals in their response to calls related to mental health, homelessness, and addiction, as well as to find resources to help police departments hire mental health co-responders. That also is a key, Dad, because it is trying to assist police in dealing with those who, again, they may be called for a situation, and that person is homeless, that person is on drugs, or is mentally ill, so that they have an expert with them to help them address the situation, so it hopefully does not escalate.
Well, I think that's the whole thing we're learning here, is that training is essential, and there's just not, frankly, just not enough. And I think what the president's going to lay out this afternoon is going to at least provide a framework where federal funds will be involved to police departments so that their officers can be properly trained to de-escalate situations, so you don't have what happened, of course, over these last several weeks, but it's been going on for years. Let's be realistic. It's just now you're seeing it in on tape. So I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. Again, this idea of defunding the police, it was a non-starter. That's not going to work. There's a reason we have police departments. And that is, again, as we've said before, if you had an emergency, you're going to want to call 911, and you're going to want to have the assistance of first responders, including the police. But here, the training obviously is essential, and de-escalating potentially hot zones or hot situations, I think, is critical. It certainly could have prevented things in Atlanta from getting out of control, as they did with the officers down there. I think it'll be better for the communities. I think it's going to be better for the police departments. But training is essential to move this forward.
And Than, this tracks, we'll talk about it in more detail, Senator Tim Scott, a Republican from South Carolina, he's also putting together legislation that would kind of track this executive order. It's got some similar items, but even more specific legislative items we'll get to in the next segment. We're taking calls as well, 1-800-684-3110. So this is a two-pronged effort, Than. You've got the executive order from the president about to be signed, and legislation being worked on by Tim Scott, where he's working on getting bipartisan support.
And that's really important, Jordan. And actually, there's some overlap between both of those and the bill that's in the House. So, look, I think if this can transcend politics, and if leaders on all sides can come together to respond to these two needs, the need for law and order and also the need for equal justice, Jordan, I've got to tell you, I think something can become law in short order that really will help.
All right, folks, we're going to take your calls and comments on this. What do you think about the president's move on this executive order to put in reforms to the police departments and Tim Scott's Senate legislation? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Your questions, your comments, 1-800-684-3110.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. If you are just joining us, the president is about to be in the Rose Garden as we are live on the broadcast to sign a new executive order on police reform. We walked through some of the points. I could just do it real quickly. It would encourage police departments to employ the latest standards and training for use of force, improve information sharing so that officers with shoddy records and backgrounds of complaints of use of excessive use of force are not hired without that background being known. It also expected to direct the Secretary of HHS to encourage police departments to embed mental health professionals in response to calls related to mental health, homelessness, and addiction. And then I think what's important, let me take Robert's call on line one. Robert, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Jordan, and hi, Jay. I wanted to ask the both of you a couple of things about the police reform in the executive order by President Trump. On the de-escalation aspect, does he go into more detail about what are some of the components of the de-escalation aspect of the police reform executive order that he's signing? And also, do you know the people that maybe he relied upon in signing this executive order for police reform in terms of the information for the reforms that he's putting forth?
So it's a great question, Robert. And first, the president consulted with a number of experts, including police chiefs, police officers, others in community. So I think there was a broad input here. Senator Scott has handled it from the Senate side, but this is a very coordinated effort with the de-escalation techniques, which I think are one of the critical aspects of this. That brings in mental health professionals to engage on this. And I had a question, actually, Jordan, I wanted to ask Andy, and it follows up with exactly what Robert is asking. And that is, Andy, the training that police officers get right now, we know they go to academies. What's the nature of it? And obviously, there needs to be refinement, as this situation has clearly shown.
Well, all police officers have to go to police training academies in order to understand what the law is and what the permissible limits of the use of force are. What this what this order does, and what hopefully the Senate legislation will do, would be to quadruple and triple, if you will, the funding that is being given to police departments so that they can get more and more and more training in the appropriate and inappropriate use of force in situations. And I think one of the important situations that comes up, Jay, is this thing about domestic relations and domestic calls where there's domestic violence. And I really like that aspect of the president's executive order that says co-responders would allow for police to do their job, but bring in social workers and experts to deal with mental health and to deal with issues such as drug addiction and alcohol and homelessness when they are responding to calls. If you have these co-responders who have been trained along with the proper training of the police, you're going to de-escalate situations that could become and turn violent very quickly.
You know, I want to go to Than, because Than, part of this is Senator Scott's kind of legislation he's working on called the Justice Act, and it adds some teeth to what the executive order would do, specifically when it comes to penalties and funding that could be taken away if certain aspects of the law that he hopes to pass and get bipartisan support, which I think would really help this executive order, but walk through some of those.
Yeah, I agree with that, Jordan. And first of all, to Robert's question, I mean, the president had law enforcement at the White House literally yesterday to talk about some of these de-escalation tactics. He's also spoken with the victims' families. I think this is a solution that both sides can get behind. But Jordan, specifically where the piece of legislation from Senator Scott comes in and really adds some teeth and some foundation to the executive order that the president will lead on today, comes to putting money behind the actions. And I mean, this is an idea that Jay talked about a couple of days ago, not defunding the police department, but actually increase funding on three specific areas that are inside this legislation. One, the reporting uses of force that cause death or serious injury. Two, funding for body cameras. And three, funding for the training on the de-escalation tactics that we just talked about with Andy. In all three of those situations, Jordan, there would be increased federal dollars in the form of grants. Of course, those have to be authorized by the Congress. That's why the legislation is needed. But then, Jordan, to your point, reporting requirements from law enforcement. And if they don't follow those guidelines, don't follow those training criteria, they lose the grant money. So, Jordan, I really do think this is something that both law enforcement and those communities who feel like they've been targeted by law enforcement, I think they can get behind. And I think this is a great way to respond from both the executive branch and the legislative branch and accomplish real change here.
Yeah, we were talking about those de-escalation tactics, Dad, and part of this legislation, you've got to have legislation to add teeth to executive orders to make them really to penalize those so that they are followed, is that they would tie grant funding to required training in what we were just talking about on de-escalation tactics, which I think is so key right now. And we know that the president not only consulted law enforcement officials, but right, families of those who were killed by police in some of these actions, which we have condemned.
No, that's exactly correct. And I was thinking about the situation in Atlanta, because obviously for you and me and for Andy, that it hits very close to home, because you grew up there.
Yep.
And in that situation, a de-escalation could have been, once the now deceased victim of this, and that's what I call him, he's a victim of this crime that I think these police officers committed. Once he had moved that car over, they should have just taken the keys. That would have de-escalated it drastically, because then his ability to go anywhere was limited. And then a social worker or someone like that, a mental health professional, Andy, could come in, determine the competency, the situation, and determine maybe the best thing to do is for this person to be admitted to a psychiatric unit. Maybe it's hospitalization. Maybe it's just sober them up. That kind of de-escalation could really help in these situations, I think.
That's why I like the idea of a co-responder, someone who responds to a situation, whether it's a domestic situation or whether it's a situation such as this man sleeping in a car in the drive-in window at Wendy's, who was apparently inebriated. But bring in somebody with alcohol, mental health training, addiction training, homelessness training, and bring it in with the police so that the police actions are tempered, and thereby de-escalated by somebody who knows, look, this person is drunk. They're likely to react in this fashion. Be aware of that, police officer. Don't automatically, reflexively go to your service revolver in this situation. Put him in some posture in which he can be helped rather than to shoot at him. I think these kinds of situations are necessary, because the important thing is to keep the peace, de-escalate the heightened tension of a situation and bring it down to manageable proportions. You're going to see less killing and less violence when those kinds of measures are implemented.
All right, let's take a question from Facebook. And if you want to talk to us on the air as we await the president's arrival, and we'll carry that live if it happens while we're on the broadcast, it should, from the Rose Garden as the officials are gathered there now for the announcement of this executive order. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Do you believe additional reforms? Do you like what you're hearing in the reforms that we're talking about right now? 1-800-684-3110. Do you have issues with them? 1-800-684-3110, or questions on Facebook and Periscope. Josephine on Facebook wrote in, I mean, I think this is a big question. It's a tough one to answer in one show and through one executive order or one piece of legislation, she wrote. Is there really a solution to this, Dad?
Boy, that's a, you know, that is a, that's a deep question on a lot of different levels. I think there is a solution to it. I think this is a, I think the country has been awakened to the situation that's going on. You see, the more videos have come out in the death of Mr. Floyd, and it's just the more you see, it was bad and horrible to begin with. It's the more you learn, the worse it is. And I think, look, I think we have a moment here. This is, you have moments in history where the country's conscience is awakened. And I think this is one of those moments. I don't think there's a quick fix to this. I don't think that you can do one, just do one thing. But I think, and I'll defer to Than on this, but I think in the executive order, Than, coupled here with the legislation, really is a powerful tool to redirect some energies and training.
I definitely agree with that, Jay. I mean, I've thought a lot about this, and it's true that a lot of these answers don't come from governments of man. They come from a change in the heart of man. But, Jay, our leaders can play a big role in starting that conversation, and I think that begins today with the remarks that the president's about to make. Look, there is a simultaneous need for law and order, as he has said repeatedly, and also a need to ensure that all Americans are treated equally under the law, and there are vast portions of the community that don't feel like they have been. Jay, leaders lead, and the president taking the lead on this, I think, enables that conversation to start. Because look, while the change might happen to have to happen in the hearts of man, government can lead the way in setting that conversation and setting a course by which Americans can come together to that end.
All right, folks, we come back. We've got a full bank of calls right now, but keep your calls coming in. 1-800-684-3110. The president just speaking now. So we will play that for you when we come back from this break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes on Jay Sekulow Live. As always, we encourage you, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, click that share button now. Bring more people in to this conversation. Click the share button now on Facebook and Periscope. Bring in your friends and family to the broadcast. And if you're able to, support the work of the ACLJ. Donate online at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Donate today.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. The president speaking live now from the Rose Garden. We're going right to it.
And thank you all for being here as we take historic action to deliver a future of safety and security for Americans of every race, religion, color, and creed. We're joined today by law enforcement professionals and community leaders. Though we may all come from different places and different backgrounds, we're united by our desire to ensure peace and dignity and equality for all Americans. I've just concluded a meeting with incredible families that have been through so much. The families of Ahmaud Arbery, Botham Jean, Antoine Rose, Jamel Roberson, Adiana Jefferson, Michael Dean, Darius Tarver, Cameron Lamb, and Everett Palmer. These are incredible people. And it's so sad. Many of these families lost their loved ones in deadly interactions with police. To all of the hurting families, I want you to know that all Americans mourn by your side. Your loved ones will not have died in vain. We are one nation. We grieve together and we heal together. I can never imagine your pain or the depth of your anguish, but I can promise to fight for justice for all of our people. And I gave a commitment to all of those families today with Senator Tim Scott and Attorney General Bill Barr. We are going to pursue what we said. We will be pursuing it, and we will be pursuing it strongly, Tim, right? Okay. I want to recognize Attorney General Bill Barr, who's spent so much time on this and other matters like this. Bill, thank you very much for being here, along with great job you're doing. Along with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Tim Scott, and they're going to be working on a Senate bill also that can go hand in hand with this. And also Representatives Kelly Armstrong, Louis Gohmert, Jim Jordan, Guy Ressenschaller, and Pete Stauber. And thanks also to Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody, the President of the Fraternal Order of Police, Pat Yost, President of the International Association of Chiefs of Police, Stephen Cass Stevens, and many other law enforcement leaders who are going to be joining me at the signing. Today is about pursuing common sense and fighting for a cause like we seldom get the chance to fight for. We have to find common ground. But I strongly oppose the radical and dangerous efforts to defend, dismantle, and dissolve our police departments, especially now when we've achieved the lowest recorded crime rates in recent history. Americans know the truth. Without police, there is chaos. Without law, there is anarchy. And without safety, there is catastrophe. We need leaders at every level of government who have the moral clarity to state these obvious facts. Americans believe we must support the brave men and women in blue who police our streets and keep us safe. Americans also believe we must improve accountability, increase transparency, and invest more resources in police training, recruiting, and community engagement. Reducing crime and raising standards are not opposite goals. They are not mutually exclusive. They work together.
All right, folks, so that is President Trump. He is delivering the remarks now on the executive order from the Rose Garden. We're going to continue to monitor that. So if there's anything that we need to play specifically on the show, we'll make sure we do that for you as well. But we want to get back to the conversation we're having with you. 1-800-684-3600. 3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And Dad, you know, we heard from the president just now, this is a serious move, this executive order.
Yeah.
And you could tell in the tone of the president, this is, again, he spoke to a lot of people. You could tell that he's spoken to a lot of people who've been through a lot of difficult situations.
All the families.
Yeah, all these families. And that's one of the toughest jobs of being president, whether it's military families or families who have faced this police brutality and lost a loved one. And I think you could tell that in the president's tone today.
Now, look, he listed just about every significant, not that there are any that are insignificant when you have these kind of situations, but every case that's been in the news, he discussed. He's obviously meeting with those families, and it's trying to put something together that is going to be beneficial to the local communities through better training. Our director of policy, Harry Hutchinson, Professor Hutchinson, is joining us as well. And I wanted to ask him, Professor Hutchinson, and that is this question. From a policy perspective, what's being implemented through the executive order and what we're seeing Senator Scott put forward in the United States Senate, how does that fit within an overall policy plan in this kind of situation?
So Harry's going to be joining us the next segment because we had the president on, we can get to him then. Let me take a phone call real quick. Teresa in Pennsylvania on line one. Teresa, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Yes. I am calling from PA, and I am in recovery. I have almost 15 years of recovery, and I've been arrested before. And even when I got arrested on more than one occasion, the police have always, you know, I've obeyed. You know what I mean? And they've always been nice. I mean, as long as I do what they ask me to do. Put your hands behind your back, roll down the window, give me your identification. I've never had a problem with police.
Yeah, but let me tell you what your situation is, okay? So you've never had a problem, and I'm glad you're in recovery, by the way, and you're sounds like you're been on a path of recovery for 15 years, and that's a really great thing. But I'm going to go to Andy on this because Andy has worked with local police and with federal agents and with state agents. And the fact of the matter is, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks, let's be clear. While this is not a majority of police officers by any stretch of the imagination, there's enough abuse out there. There's enough of a problem out there. And it's still happening after the murder of Mr. Floyd, the killing of Mr. Floyd, that you saw the situation develop in Atlanta. So, Andy, it's fine that people have had what I would call honorable experiences in dealing with law enforcement, and that's the vast majority. But we've got to be realistic here. There is a problem, and that problem is the inability sometimes to use common sense in the middle of a difficult situation where you can de-escalate. And I think that's why you're having specific action taken by the federal government to engage the local government.
Well, that's the whole thing, Jay, is the use of common sense in dealing with a tumultuous and potentially dangerous situation. And the police have to learn to use common sense. And if they have co-responders with them who have training in areas such as addiction and alcohol, that may add to the use of common sense, which is really all we really need in these situations, is to use some just decent common sense in handling situations that escalate and that then cause them thereby to de-escalate. That's the important thing.
And what we're starting to see, too, through the legislation that's moving forward is incentives to utilize common sense, incentives to keep the body cameras on, and penalties if the body cameras aren't there. So, again, we'll talk about it. Second half hour coming up. Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, 1-800-684-3110. The president continues to address the nation. We've played some of that for you, and we'll play some more from you from that as well on the announcements of this executive order. It is, again, an executive order, if you're just joining us in the second half hour of the broadcast, to improve how police officers treat African Americans and others by improving credentialing, training, and mental health resources. It encourages police departments to employ the latest standards for use of force, improves information sharing so that officers with shoddy records and excessive use of force complaints, that they're not hired without their backgrounds being known, so that you actually know about the officer that's being hired. It's expected also to direct the Secretary of HHS to encourage police departments to embed mental health professionals. This is big in their response to calls related to mental health, homelessness, and addiction, and as well as they're going to help police departments find and hire mental health co-responders. Then Senator Scott is working on kind of the parallel legislation to give this executive order teeth. What it does is a few things, and it's called the Justice Act. It boosts the reporting of the use of force that causes death or serious injury to the FBI. It includes the George Floyd Walter Scott Notification Act, which would tie grant eligibility to reporting of uses of force that cause death or serious injury to the FBI data collection. But what here, and I think this is what's most important, here's where the teeth really come in. There is an increased funding for body cameras. So the police will get an increased funding for body cameras, but they will receive a reduction of grants for states police departments that fail to penalize the failure to wear issued body cameras. And they're tying grant funding to required training on de-escalation tactics. So you've got to do that training to get grant funding. And to, of course, maintain a system for sharing these records of law enforcement officers. So again, you know who you're hiring, Dad.
Yep, exactly right. So I think this is a very good start, but I wanted to bring in our director of policy, Professor Harry Hutchison, because obviously with what Senator Scott is doing and what the president is laying out in this executive order, these are policy determinations being made. So Professor Hutchison, your sense of this from a policy perspective.
Well, Jay, my first response is what the president and what Senator Tim Scott are suggesting and recommending, and the president's going to sign an executive order which will do some of this, is that what we need instead of defunding the police is we need to increase funding. We need to report on police who use excessive force. We need to fund body cams and improve training and de-escalation techniques. And the best evidence of that, I think, is to look at Camden, New Jersey, which instead of defunding the police in the early part of the last decade or so, they increased the size of their police force by 100%. They increased the number of social workers who went out with the police, and they increased the number of police officers who would walk the beat in neighborhoods. So police officers would actually get to know the citizens. Now, as a result, at least in part of these efforts, the crime rate in Camden, New Jersey, declined, and the number of reported cases of police misconduct also fell. So that's at least one possible model.
All right, folks, when we come back, we'll start taking more of your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. We have phone calls support what the president's doing, others with questions, some who oppose. So we'll take all of them. 1-800-684-3110. We want to have a discussion here. Got a couple phone lines open. If you call now, you'll be on. You can get on the air with us with your question or comment. 1-800-684-3110. And we'll play some more from President Trump, who's speaking in the Rose Garden now on this executive order. As always, if you can support the work of the ACLJ financially, we encourage you to do so. We are working across the country with teams of attorneys, our government affairs team, and the world. Donate online at aclj.org.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. Guys, do we have this new sound yet from the president on the chokehold issue? He specifically addressed the use of chokeholds. Take a listen. President Trump, this is today, it's still happening, and the Rose Garden announcing this executive order. Take a listen to President Trump.
As part of this new credentialing process, chokeholds will be banned except if an officer's life is at risk. And I will say we've dealt with all of the various departments and everybody said it's time. We have to do it.
So there you go, Dad. Another huge change in police tactics.
Big.
I mean, to say that chokeholds...
Only if your life's at risk.
Yeah, they're banned unless your life is at risk. And that is a high standard when you know now as a police officer that you could be facing criminal charges for using something like that.
So... Look, I think this raises a couple of issues. One is an interesting one is you got the federal government saying the issue is significant enough that federal funding could be tied into this. So that if a department still was using chokeholds, which would be basically a banned procedure, except in the time when a police officer's life is actually in jeopardy, money would now not be available or there'd be penalties or maybe a criminal statute involved. Andy, this is a sea change in the way the federal government's interacting on this.
Well, it really is. It's the first time that I have seen that the federal government is really getting down to the nitty-gritty of helping local police departments and police agencies do the job of policing communities. I have never seen this before. I have never seen where the federal government, through this executive order of the president and Senator Scott's legislation, is really getting granular with respect to the police departments and saying, we'll give you discretionary grants, training is what it's all about, chokeholds are not permissible except in the life of the officer is at risk. I've never heard this in all the years that I've been around. And now that they're doing this, this means that this president and this administration are serious about stopping the situations that we have experienced in the United States in the last month or so. And I applaud them for that very much.
Let me ask Harry this, Professor Hutchinson, again. This is a big policy statement coming in and from the federal government saying no to a particular technique or device used to subdue someone assumed of a, or accused of a crime or a potential lawbreaker, to saying that particular process, that particular technique cannot be used.
I think that's a very, very important move for a number of reasons, including history. Past history has shown that these chokeholds have a disproportionate tendency to lead to death or serious injury. So what the president is saying is that police officers will no longer be allowed to use this particular technique unless a deadly force is allowable. So in other words, that's perhaps the only way to subdue an individual without shooting that particular individual. So I think it's very, very important. It's an important step. I think there are a number of other steps that the president is also supporting that will be helpful in moving this issue forward and reducing the number of excessive police force incidents and complaints. And that will also, I think, improve the level of trust in many communities.
Yeah, I think that's right. Let's go ahead and take some calls, Jordan, because I will obviously we save it for the last segment. We got so many coming in, though.
Yeah, we do. Let's go to Stephen in Kentucky on line three. Stephen, welcome to JSEC Yo Live. You're on the air.
Yes, I had a question. Would these professionals be allowed to ride with law enforcement?
So the question, it's a good one, of whether if there was a need to call in a healthcare professional, a social worker, to analyze a situation, will they actually be in the patrol car or will they be called up? I don't know the answer to that, and I think it will depend in large part upon local community policing. But having those resources available to help de-escalate a situation, I think could be a critical. This could be the biggest move on police reform that we've seen. And I think also prioritizing the arrest so that we're in situations that don't escalate and get out of hand, as these we've seen over the last months have clearly done that. Now, I know we've got some opposition calls on that, and I respect that. I want to take those calls. But I think, look, I think having these social workers available is very important.
It does say in the text that it will encourage police departments to embed mental health professionals in their response to the call. So if they've got the time, they would be going at the same time with him. I don't know if they'll be in the same vehicle, but they can at least...
Or maybe called in right away.
They called in at the same time. So, but even the word embed is used in the executive order. We do have some opposed calls coming in as well. Dennis in Alabama on line two. Dennis, welcome to JSEC Yo Live.
Hi, Dennis. Hello, gentlemen. I have to ask a question to you of y'all. Now, this doesn't count the Minneapolis thing. That was horrific, and I don't even want to discuss that one right now because it still makes me mad. But what else could they have done in Atlanta? They were polite. They were courteous. They investigated the situation, determined they had more than sufficient probable cause to make an arrest, and at that point, the subject became violent.
Right.
They did not do anything that they should not have done. He attacked them in the course of resisting, stole the taser, and then threatened them with the taser. Okay. In that situation,
so
that
taser,
is a critical
taser
threat.
In Georgia, Dennis, is not considered a lethal weapon. Okay? So let's be clear. The police argue in court that the use, when they're sued, that the use of a taser is not a lethal weapon. So if the person that is the accused here in the situation in Atlanta, first of all, I think there was a couple of things. When he moved over the car into the, at that point, into the parking space, got out of the Wendy's line, I think they should have taken the keys. That reduces the capability of anything to be done with a motor vehicle, which could have been dangerous. Then the question is, if in fact he was intoxicated and they were trying to commit an arrest and the individual was objecting to the arrest, and ran, grabbed the taser and ran. There's two things that took place in my view as I've looked at this evidence. The number one, the taser is not a lethal weapon. So returning with a lethal weapon in response was a disproportionate response to the situation. That's number one. Number two, based on the video evidence that has been shown on multiple broadcasts, the individual officer moved the taser, took out his taser too, moved it to his left hand, at that point went to his holster for his weapon, the gun, and that was before the individual turned back around with the taser. But again, it was in my mind, and I have a lot of respect for the police, and I want this to be better. And Dennis, I appreciate you calling in. But be aware of the circumstances we're dealing with as a country, too. What happened to Mr. Floyd has unleashed in this country a situation where we need to be aware. And for instance, in that particular case, with the individual drunk in the car, but not really causing any problems, that's probably the time for, under the new policies, a social worker, Harry, to come in with the police officer and determine what is the best course of action, including treatment or whatever it might be.
I think you're absolutely correct. So I think one of the things to keep in mind is the whole notion of proportionality. So is the police response generated by the incident, is it equal or does it exceed the threat posed to the community? In that particular case, that particular individual did not pose a viable threat to the community. So I think some form of de-escalation was indeed justified. I am not sure that shooting an individual while he's running away can be justified in a court of law. I should hasten to add, I don't practice in the state of Georgia. I don't know what all of the rules are, but from my perspective, the conduct of the police was not proportional to the threat posed.
Yeah, well, I'm licensed in Georgia as well as Washington, and Andy is, of course, licensed in Georgia. And Georgia, Andy, in a situation in Georgia, a taser is not considered legally a lethal weapon.
No, it's not a lethal weapon. I was not there that night. I don't know what the police officer had in mind. I don't know what the subject had in mind. But returning deadly force against nonviolent force would not be permissible.
All right, folks, we come back. We will continue to take more of your phone calls. Just one line open right now, so if you want to be on the air, call now, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Some more sound, too, to play from the president. He's finished up his address in the Rose Garden on what he believes is also critical to this effort, not just police reform, but reform in communities as well. We'll play that when we come back on Jay Sekulow Live, as we take more of your questions, calls, and comments. As always, I encourage you, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, click that share button now. And if you can, donate to the American Center for Law and Justice. Support all of the work that we do and this broadcast that we provide every single day at aclj.org. Donate today.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So President has finished up his remarks on the executive order. We've been going through those, and we're going to take more of your phone calls, questions, and comments. Let's start with Kevin in Texas on line six. Kevin, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I have comments on two different issues. The Georgia thing, which I'll just leave off for the comment. But with all this talk about reforming the police, it's going to take forever, because one of the things that they've neglected, or should I say they've actually caused the problem themselves, is that if you hire people who are criminals, thugs, people with anger management problems to begin with, those attitudes are going to come out in their police work.
Of course.
My uncle became a police officer, if you had too many parking tickets, you couldn't get on the job without an appeal to the higher chain of command.
Yeah, so what you're saying basically is this, is that the qualifications for office need to include psychological evaluations, which, of course, makes absolute sense. Now, Wes Smith is with us, who, of course, is a ACLJ analyst for us on international matters and armed conflict, but also has family that are police officers and has worked with police in the military as well. And Wes, you've got a piece up at aclj.org. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, you know, a lot of what we're seeing around the country right now at every level is more reacting to what's happening as opposed to responding. And we're all capable and at times guilty of doing this. But, you know, reacting to anything that confronts us individually or collectively, by its very nature, is not logical. And we see that with some of the street demonstrations. We see it in some police officer behavior, except in extreme cases where our individual life and safety are threatened in very real time, sort of the fight or flight scenarios. Reacting to something is frequently not helpful and leads to regret. Responding, on the other hand, by definition, implies a desire to take a stand, but to address what is happening, to seek to fix it and resolve the issue. And so, you know, our nation's very divided right now. And so my piece on ACLJ.org today is a plea for us to quit reacting and to start fixing things and start responding, because there is more that unites us as an American people, so much more than that which divides us. And yet we have really, really focused on divisions in the last few weeks.
Let's go back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. In fact, I actually want to play sound. This is interesting because the president, the executive order and the signing ceremony, of course, focused on police reform, but he also talked about community reform and an issue that is near and dear to us. I know many of you listening to this broadcast, and that is getting kids out of bad schools utilizing voucher programs, which teachers unions and other liberal activist groups have strongly opposed. But take a listen. The president is not taking this lying down. He sees that you've got to do more than just one piece of reform, that's going to take multiple aspects of reform. Take a listen to President Trump.
We're fighting for school choice, which really is the civil rights of all time in this country. Frankly, school choice is the civil rights statement of the year, of the decade, and probably beyond, because all children have to have access to quality education. A child's zip code in America should never determine their future. And that's what was happening. So we're very, very strong on school choice.
So, I mean, Dad, again, this is an issue we care about deeply. And we've actually already begun a team looking into this as part of this overall effort. We'll have more to say on it in later broadcasts.
I know that's correct. Now, I think I want to address that.
Yeah.
Oops.
Go ahead. Dad, you there? It looks like we're having an issue with him right now. We may have to reconnect. But it is something we are going to be addressing in the future, because we believe, you know, we've been looking at this, say, how can the ACLJ, what can we do as a legal organization with our policy expertise? And of course, we have the radio broadcast, and we can commentate and post the blogs like Wes' great statement as well. But what else can we do? So in the coming days, you're going to hear more about that kind of, remember that this is a full scope problem that we've got to deal with, and that you can't do it piece by piece. And Dad, that's the key, is that, and we'll be announcing more in the future, but it's something we have expertise in, And as the president indicated, it's part of solving the bigger problem. You cannot just say, we'll fix the police and that's going to fix the communities. It won't.
So this is a holistic approach to community development, and school choice has always been something we thought has been a really good idea. And I know Logan has particularly been interested in this with some of our team. I think they're even meeting on it today. But that's how you impact community-wide protection here. And Andy, as you deal with local law enforcement, it's community-based law enforcement, and that is where the improvement needs to be, a holistic approach to the community.
The police need to be integrated into the community and not seen as the enemies of the community or the outsiders coming in to tell people what to do, but to help them and to assist them and to mollify situations, make them less enhanced in terms of violence and things like that, to make peace and to become part of the citizenry and not to be apart. We don't want blue to be apart from gray. We want it to be together, and that is what training is all about, and that's why I think the president's executive order, which focuses on training and focuses on integration of the police force into the local communities, is so monumental, Jay.
No, I agree. Let me go quickly to Wes on this, Jordan, then I'll let you close up. Wes, you've worked with communities as a pastor in the military. I'm thinking in a holistic approach here is really the way that this has to go.
Oh, absolutely. I wish that there were a silver bullet that would solve these issues. These issues are multifaceted, and a holistic approach, if you will, a multifaceted approach is what we need. It involves education, as you mentioned. It involves the economy. It involves attitudes, changing how we look at one another. It is a multifaceted issue. It is solvable, but it will not be solved with one piece of legislation or one magic bullet. It will take multiple efforts. It will take bipartisanship to come together as the American people, which in the past, that's one of the things we do best. And we will take a holistic approach to deal with this issue. And the issue has many, many facets to it.
Let's take Ann's call from Washington State, quickly, line one, and then we'll try to get Jack as well. Ann, quickly.
Okay, yes. My question is, how about trying to hold the SPD people responsible for staffing? With mental health, we staff clients that are difficult. We staff them in front of our coworkers, and we have to face what did we do right, what did we not do right. And we have to face our own internal potential prejudice, if there was one, or intents that may not be right before you unless you talk to your coworker.
I think that's part of this approach that HHS is pushing. And I think that they're saying put the mental health professionals, embed them with the police departments, and that the HHS is going to help them find the mental health professionals to hire. Final call of the day. Very quickly, Jack, we only got 50 seconds left, but I wanted to get to your call. Thanks for holding on.
I appreciate it. Real quick, I am a former law enforcement officer. I have interracial marriage and kids, and I will tell you this, that it was never okay to hit anybody above the neck unless it was life or death.
Yep.
So, but you also have to understand, where did it change? When did this change?
Yep.
And just like the lady said, there was training that we did, and now the mental health is out of it, and we're asking these young men to go in.
I understand, Jack. You know, we need and thank you for your service. Training needs to be redone. The president said that today. We'll talk more about it tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.